Guardians of the Land.
Hello and welcome to our podcast about sustainable living. If you like our project, we invite you to support us with your contribution by following the link in the description.
In our 14th episode, we had the opportunity to record a talk from Elder Valente during the Festança Permaculture Festival in North Portugal. Elder is an experienced permaculture teacher, and he shares his stories on the journey throughout the Amazon jungle for a year round. In his research, he tries to support the lives of some indigenous tribes that he visits on his way. This episode reveals his truth of the reality and challenges that some of the Amazonian tribes are facing to survive nowadays.
People have been living in harmony with the land for thousands of years. We are just kind of destroying the planet for the past 100 years since the Industrial Revolution. Before that, for thousands of years, people were living in harmony. 200 years ago, almost all over the world, it was common to find trees like this, everywhere. And the main reason for that is because it was hard to cut it. If you don't have a power machine, if you have to do it by hand, it's hard to cut a big tree and to process it and all that. So until 100 years ago, there were massive trees everywhere. And now it's hard to find a big tree, old tree. So the exploitation that we've been doing on the last years, it's really concerning. And if we keep on this rhythm, in 50 years, how it's going to look like?
Os olhos que é hora de acordar, dar as mãos, a viagem começou.
When I got to the Amazon, one of my greatest disappointments and one of the hardest things to deal with was that the Indians, they didn't have much food. And the forest was not providing anymore. And that the Indians were not properly taking care of the forest. And I always thought that the Indians knew how to take care of the forest. So that wasn't easy. And then some tribes I visited, the ones more close to the city, they were very dependent on the government. They were getting money from the government, but they were not investing it on their tribe. They were just spending it. Most Indians you visit now, they all have mobile phone, just like us. One of the things that I was looking for when I got there was looking for the old hunter-gatherers, which is people that just live from collecting the food. They don't grow food. They just collect. And for me, that was the maximum of human presence on the planet, which is just take. You don't have to grow it, because nature's providing so much, there's so much abundance around you, that you don't have to plant. And I knew that some parts of the world, there are still people like this, but they are hard to find. And one of the closest that I found was one day on a boat. I was going in a canoe, and there was a local guy that came with me, old man, with two kids. We were going to town, and he was bringing some palm fruits to sell in the market that he harvested from the forest. It's a fruit of a palm tree that is called pejibaye, and it's one of the main foods of the Amazon. It's like our potatoes, but they come from a palm tree. And that That was the base of the food of the indigenous people in the Amazon. But now they changed to rice because it's more modern. And they want to look more modern. So they eat rice, which has a lot of chemicals, comes from very far away, it's really destructive. It's not from their place. And so they changed their food to become modernized. They changed their food habits. And that's something that made a huge difference there.
In the Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. There is one root is called taro. Anyone knows taro? Inyam? You know taro? Where are you from?
Australia.
Australia. People eat taro there. Yeah, so taro it's a plant. It's the oldest plant ever cultivated. You can collect, cook it, and you can give it to a baby that was born yesterday, and it's really nutritious for the baby. So it's super food, and it was traditional food in the Amazon. But since more or less two generations, people forgot what that is. And for thousands of years, that's what they were eating there. So that's a huge problem. This guy was collecting this palm fruits. We ended up in the same canoe with his kids. I was asking him what was he growing, and he said, "Oh, I just grow bananas." And I was like, "Anything else?" "No, mostly bananas." And I asked, "What about the rest?" "The rest we just get from the forest." And then he was with his two kids. And I was with another guy, an American guy, that had the new iPhone, most recent iPhone. And I was sitting with this American guy, and there was this campesino with his two kids. And the two kids were just looking at the iPhone of the gringo. And looking at each other, and they looked and they said, "Oh, that's the iPhone 10. They could recognize what was the iPhone, what was the brand. So it was really interesting to see this one world fading, disappearing, which is the hunter-gatherer, one of the last ones. And these kids, this next generation that are into technology, just like we are. He said, "Oh, I'm going to the city to sell this these fruits, and I'm taking my kids for them to learn how to do it. Because it's important for them to learn for the future." But the kids were really into the iPhone, so that was really interesting. So, in the Amazon you see a lot this contrast of realities. And especially some parts of the Amazon, like Iquitos, there's a lot of tourists. And that's been changing a lot, the jungle, as we call it. One interesting thing that it's happening is that some tribes, before, they were ashamed of their traditions and their costumes because they are second-class people. In the Amazon, it's like the more Indian you are, the more discrimination you get. So they have tendency to kind of become more like white men, dress like white men, do things like white men, so that they don't feel primitive. But now with the tourists that are going down there, the tourists, you know, they valorize the traditional and the indigenous. So they buy stuff from them. So now again they start to come with the traditional clothes and traditional language because of the recognition of the tourists. There was one tribe in the Amazon, the Matze people. I have a friend. He has a big project with the Matze people, one of the most beautiful permaculture projects I know. He's doing agroforestry with the indigenous people, and they grow superfoods, Amazon superfoods. The Indians grow for him. And then he exports all over the world. And with the money, they support the tribe. But it's an isolated tribe, the Matses. You need to get there by military airplane. And some tribes, they have things, they have habits that we don't really understand. This Matse people, when someone in the family dies, all the family eats a piece of the dead body. Some people leave from this tribe because they don't want to do that anymore. Something they do, they marry really young. Usually girls really young can marry, like, sometimes 14 years old girls. Sometimes with much older men. So this culture shock was something that was also not easy for me to process. The tribes that I've seen that were doing the best, they were close to a river. And the river is a source of many things for them, many, many resources. Tribes that were more far away from the rivers, they had more trouble, more problems. One example of this tribe was in Brazil. I visited the Peruvian side, Peru, and Brazil side. And there was a big difference. One of these tribes I visited in Brazil, the Kawanawa tribe of the Uniquin clan, they were really poor. They had an original land, but then the government gave them another land and gave them some houses. And then they moved there. They moved out of their river. And then they were living in extreme poverty. There was a lot of famine. Children, malnutrition, and at some point I asked him, why do you say the children don't have food? Why do you say you don't eat for all these days? Because we don't have money to buy food. And I told him, but if you can grow bananas, there is no reason why you don't have food. Because bananas give you a lot of energy, a lot of food, it's very easy to grow. And nobody starves if they have bananas. And then he said, yeah, but if we grow bananas and if we show that we have food, then the government does not give us the subsidies. So they have to look poor. And in looking poor, they are really being starving without food, which is strange. They also have a lot of problems with alcohol, some tribes. It always depends on the chief. There are two very important people on the indigenous group. One is the leader, tribe leader, the chief, and the other one is the shaman. Some tribes, the shaman and the chief is the same person. And this is for a tribe, let's say. And then there is the clan, which is several tribes together. Then you have the clan chief also. It's kind of hierarchical also. Some other tribes that I went deeper in the jungle, they have totally different attitude. Because to get there, you need to go like 8 hours by canoe, by boat. So for them to have access to resources, it's almost impossible. Just a boat that comes sometimes. And the chief of the tribe there was really motivated to make his tribe work. So when I got there, I went to visit the chief's house, and the roof was full of bananas hanging. There was so much. And then they were doing a lot of things. They were planting a lot. They had a lot of mandioc, cassava. Grow a lot of cassava. Happy tribe. I like that tribe. One interesting thing about that tribe, this is the Yanawa tribe in the Gregorio River. He's got the whole tribe working on the land, improving the land. Also for tourism, to receive some tourists, they do rituals there. But the sheaf was really active. They still had problems because they would go hunting and there was not much to hunt. But they had ducks in the river, so they ate a lot of ducks and ducks' eggs. And when I got there, the chief was also preparing an area to have fish, to grow fish. So this tribe was much better. Much better and much more interested in learning. So there's a lot of diversity in the tribes that you find also. The Amazon is bigger than Europe, just for you to have an idea of the size of it. I traveled 1 year in the high Amazon and I just saw very little bit. So there's a lot to see. But a lot of people think it's the Amazon, this big trees, big forest. It's very hard to find because it's been all chopped down. So you have to go really, really deep to find a big tree. Something interesting, the tribes in Brazil, the tribes I've seen, they are this romantic idea of the sacred tree, you know, the sacred tree. These tribes in Brazil, they have the sacred tree. It's called the Suma Uma. And from like permaculture perspective, it's not super interesting. The wood is not very good. But they grow really tall and really big, and they are beautiful. So in Brazil, they had this reverence for this big tree. So whenever I would visit their tribe, they always had the big tree to show me, which was nice. But in Peru, they didn't add that. So, most forest that I've seen there was about this size, which is secondary forest. It's a forest that it's about between 20 and 40 years old. So most of what you see in the Amazon is that. You don't get there and you see these massive trees and all, because it's all been chopped down. Chopped down. There's a memory of a guy, I used to catch a boat. I was working in a place and I needed to catch a canoe to go to that place. And in this little port where I got the canoe, there was one guy every day cutting wood with a chainsaw. It was kind of a port, so a lot of people were bringing wood that they were cutting to this guy and he was cutting. One interesting thing, this guy had only one arm. He had an accident in the jungle with the chainsaw, he had only one arm. So every time I would pass there, I would see this guy with one arm cutting Amazon wood every day. And it was just like a factory, wood coming in, being cut and going away all the time. So that was something that I was a bit disappointed about because I wanted to see the big trees and I didn't. I found them in Brazil. So one thing I do is syntropic agriculture. I don't know if you guys heard about. I was a student of Ernst. I worked with Ernst Koch. So, syntropic agriculture, it's to do forests of fruits and food and everything mixed, big mix of plants. So that's what I try to do there. And also sometimes explain to the Indians how could they valorize their products. Like, for example, there was one tribe. This was really funny. Because of the food change I was talking about. There was a tribe I visited. They just wanted bread, which is made of wheat that doesn't grow in tropical climate. It's not from there. They never ate bread before, but now they want bread because it's the white man thing. And bread is expensive. It needs to come from far away. but not the Indians are, they want bread. So they were growing cassava, mandioc. So I made mandioc bread for them because they were producing it. Yeah, it's a bit sticky. It's a bit sticky. So they didn't like it so much. But yeah, I cooked it, it was good. But it's very hard to change their habits. It's very hard to change their habits. There's another story. One day I was walking with this chief in the tribe, looking to the bananas and to the plantations that he was doing. And he was with some other important people. And we were walking, explaining things. And some things they were clearly, they didn't know. They were surprised and they showed me, oh, wow, that's very interesting. Oh, wow, that's special. Some other things they would say, oh, but we do it like this. They would bring also their knowledge. And that was really nice. At some point that I was explaining something and the conversation went different direction. And they started talking about the Portuguese, which were the ones that colonized Brazil. And did a lot of bad things there. And there I was, Portuguese guy, teaching the Indians how to live their life. And that was very kind of awkward thing. And at some time, there was an Indian that said, yeah, if the Portuguese didn't get this, we wouldn't be in this situation. I don't have much of an expectation of helping people because I've gotten disappointed before. But I do the best I can. And if I were them, what I would like to receive, that's what I try to do. I have no expectation that they will use it. If I say something that makes sense in their head, they start to do it next day. So you start to see the results immediately. With Indians, sometimes was not the most easy because of this contemplation life. Saying, elder, Indian doesn't like to work. Indian não gosta de trabalhar. Some tribes were like that, so it was more challenging. You know, they have to realize and understand that they need to change. They need to start to grow. They need to start to take care of the forest. Otherwise, it's not going to be possible. Like, there was one tribe. They make the roofs out of this palm leaves, you know, palm leaves. It's called thatched roof. And this comes from very specific palm. And there were tribes that to get this palm to make roofs, they had to travel for 2 hours and carry it for 2 hours walking in the forest, which is very far away. Because the palms that were close, they already extracted all of it. So there was one tribe, they had to do this walk for 2 hours to bring the... was a lot of work. And then I talked with the chief, so why did you have to go so far away to get these palms? Because we cut all of them that were close. And then I asked him, but why didn't you plant it more? And he said, because they grow very slowly and they take 30 years to harvest. So they were not really thinking about the next generations, just like us. Which was something that I was expecting the Indians to do, to have this special care about the future generations. Because in the past, the Indians, to make a decision, they would consider the next 7 generations, which is about 100 years. North American Indians and a bit Indians all over the world, they have big consideration for the impact of the next generations. But many have lost that. They don't have it anymore. They just make decisions for now. It was interesting because this tribe, they had a lot of acai. You guys know acai? Acai palm? You tried acai? Ice cream? So they grow a lot of acai. They love it. And in the village, in the center of the village, there's acai palms everywhere. Because they really like to eat it, the Indians. But the palms for making the roof, they don't have anymore. And it's going to take at least 30 years to get again. So what do? They try to get money to buy this metal roof that makes the house super hot and to try to solve that problem. Things are speeding up more and more, and we're taking resources faster and faster. And there is one lie in the economical world, which is exponential growth. We cannot keep on growing, because the limits are finite. There's a limit of the resource. There's a X number of trees in the world. If you take them all, then no trees. So, one of the big things I promote is to try to do degrowth, reduce consumption. I think that's the biggest solution. We can talk about sustainable world, greener world, electrical cars. Why don't we reduce cars? Less cars. Instead of, electrical cars, they take a lot of resources. Take plutonium, coltan and lithium. Oh, yes. They want to big big mines in Portugal, no? Yeah. They have a plan, a map for a lot of mines in Portugal because of this lithium. Is that sustainable? Is that green? Is that going to make your electrical cars sustainable? These lithium mines for the batteries? It's a big lie. So I think one of the big problems we have in our culture is lack of ethics. Lack of honesty. Permaculture was important for me because it's an ethical system. It's got clear ethics. Take care of the people, take care of the earth, and share in a fair way. Those are the permaculture ethics, and it's very clear. And that goes against the world that we live in, which is a world of exploitation and scarcity. If we have few, then we can sell it expensive. If there is a lot, then it's abundance. Everybody has everything they need. We don't need competition. That's why kind of I went to the Amazon to see that. How people live if there is abundance everywhere. And that's our great objective, is to create abundance for everybody everywhere. And that's why I ended up in the Amazon, because I wanted to see that. But I saw the contrary. The other day I was talking with a farmer, and he was showing me his plum tree. And he said, "Elder, this plum tree produces a lot more than I can eat. It's falling on the ground, it's full of flies. There's too many fruit, too much fruit." And that was a really simple example of what is abundance that we want to create. It's a stage in which you have more than you can deal with, almost. It becomes a problem, it's pollution. Too many plums, too many flies. But I didn't have to go far away to learn that. You know, I could learn it here. Problem of abundance and scarcity. And sometimes here in a poor farmer that lives here in Baião, you see someone that is producing a lot of abundance, more than he can eat and more than he can give to his friends. And you go to the Amazon and you don't find that. Some tribes, yes. But that's why, as years went by, I got more and more into campesinos, into poor farmers. Because I believe in many ways they are the ones that can make a difference. Like, we have this beautiful world, but we're destroying it and we're destroying ourselves, which also brings a lot of frustration. Like, we could do a lot better. And for me, I knew we could do better. I didn't know how. And that's why I got really involved from the beginning, because it was providing me the how. How do you have a relationship with your surrounding that is harmonious and creates abundance? And that's what I was looking for a long time. And then when I found permaculture, this is what I was looking for. It's putting everything together. It's based on how nature works, and that was a big thing for me. I wanted to know how nature works. There was nobody close to me that could explain me that. And nature is everywhere. So I felt, if there is this thing everywhere all the time, why nobody or very few people know how this works? I want to know how that works. So that was the reason behind it. What can we do with after discovering? I cannot say I know how nature works. I know some things, but there's always more. And I think it's important to share more of this so that more people develop that connection. And I think that will change people's attitude and will change culture and will make us go live in a new world, new paradigm, slowly. In many ways, we are already living it. We are here. This is in many ways already paradise for us. When this festival, like-minded people, similar ideas, supportive people, happy people, beautiful children everywhere. So in many ways, we're already living in paradise. It's just not 24 hours a day. Sometimes it's 5 minutes. If you have a happy thought or you feel good. But a lot of people is talking about a new world that we want to create. But in many ways, this world is already here. It's just for shorter time. We want to expand that.
Yuramin, guardians of the land.